Chapter 10. Massacre. Roads diverge. At what cost? Another four ships lifted off in quick succession, and Vashti let out a shuddering breath. Her heart rate hadn't dropped below 100 in the last hour, and only the constant flow of stims was keeping her going. She gave herself a second to watch the departing contrails pushing up through the striated clouds overhead, before turning her attention back to the hastily wired data slates before her.
"The next wave is coming in too fast,"
said Tessa Rom, her voice grating and mechanical.
"I see them," she said, switching vox channels. "Flight wave 63 Lambda, approaching on transit corridor Alpha Niner. Slow your approach. Cross demarcation line Olympia in 5, 4, 3.
She breathed a sigh of relief as she watched the tracks of the departing vessels and incoming craft diverge, no longer in danger of colliding.
"How many away in the last wave?" asked Vashti.
"Manifests record 15,000 en route to the fleet pickets."
Vashti tapped the icons for the arriving craft in their hold volumes, working out how many people could be crammed inside.
"Not enough," she said. "It's never enough."
She called the image of the tens of thousands pressed hard against the walls and gates of the fortress onto her tertiary slates. Her heart sank anew at the knowledge that most of these people would be left behind. The approaching ships made a wide circuit of the fortress to bleed off the speed of their rapid descent. Vashti was put in mind of carrion feeders circling a corpse and preparing to pick clean its bones. She shook off the disturbing image, and her brow furrowed in puzzlement as she saw the newly arrived craft still hadn't begun their final approach.
"Tessa," she said, "what's going on? Why aren't those ships on their descent?"
"Checking now," said Tessa. "Flight wave 63 Lambda, expedite your descent immediately. Our departure schedules allow for no delays. I repeat, commence your descent immediately."
Vashti called up the passenger manifests. Thousands of names scrolled past, and she wondered how each name had been chosen. Who made the decision on who would live and who would die? Most likely it had been Perturabo. And in that moment, Vashti hated him like she had hated no other living being. To stand over a world not his own and decide the fate of its people was the act of a tyrant. An alert flashed onto her screen, and she swiped it to her primary panel. Trajectories flashed before her, downward spiraling patterns now reversing and heading back into orbit.
"What the—"
she murmured, assuming it had to be an error. She looked over at Tessa, seeing the Magos twitching in her tank, the pink gel-like amniotic fluid flecked with bubbles by her friend's consternation.
"Tessa," she said, "why are those ships leaving?"
"They have been commanded to depart Kalena's airspace."
"What?"
said Vashti, checking her terminals for any sign of a command issued in error.
"Commanded by whom?"
"The command bears the seal of the Imperial Governor," said Tessa. "It directs all ship captains to return to their carrier vessels, and furthermore, orders an immediate cessation of evacuation operations."
"Is he insane?" demanded Vashti. "We have days yet to evacuate the surface. We can save tens of thousands of Morningstar's people."
A hard knot of dread formed in Vashti's gut at the thought of no more vessels returning to the surface. Was this the moment she had dreaded? The moment that those in charge decided that no more could be done?
"No, that makes no sense," she said. "This has to be a mistake. It's got to be."
"The order is unambiguous," said Tessa.
"I don't care how clear it is," snapped Vashti. "Rescind it. Get those damn ships back."
"I am attempting to, but the captains refuse to return."
"Then use the EMAG tether," shouted Vashti. "Get them down on these landing platforms right bloody now. Do what you have to do, but get them down and loading."
Tessa's body flinched in its liquid suspension, and streams of noospheric data rose like red smoke from her tank.
"I cannot. I am locked out," said Tessa,
the artificial cadence of her voice still managing to convey indignation.
"None of our core systems are accepting my access codes."
"How is that even possible?"
asked Vashti, clearing her slates and going deep into the structure of the jury-rigged operating system the Mechanicum had set up for her aviation traffic control protocols. She hadn't had time to perform due diligence on the minutiae of the system architecture. That they worked was enough for her. To facilitate the evacuation efforts, the Primarch Perturabo had consented to her cogitators being integrated with the logic engines of the Shirai Mavith, which meant she had access to the superior operating systems of the Iron Warrior's fortress. But that, in turn, meant anyone who could gain access to her system could access the Fortress Command network. Lines of disrupting code bearing the authority seal of Conrad Varga were copying themselves to every aspect of the Citadel's internal systems, shutting down its defensive protocols one by one. A series of juddering vibrations travelled up through the floor of the command center, and Vashti turned to the slates displaying the exterior of the fortress. Her heart sank as she saw a number of enormous detonations rising skywards amongst the packed refugees. Panic spread through the thousands pressed up against the fortress wall, as yet more explosions blasted deep craters in the ground.
"No, no, no, no,"
she said, as the intricately layered and overlapping minefields began reactivating in deadly sequence. Dozens of explosions ripped through the tightly packed refugees, and Vashti bunched her fists as billowing clouds of smoke and debris obscured the full horror of the massacre. Shockwaves travelled the full height of the wall, and she wept to witness such an appalling death toll. She would never know if what happened next was part of some monstrous plan, or whether someone inside the Shirai Mavith acted with compassion for the victims beyond the wall. The colossal gate of the fortress was rising, and thousands of people poured inside. Ahriman maglocked his bolter to his thigh and moved to the eighth enumeration. He wove a circle of perception in his hands and let his breath come in short, sharp hikes. He tapped into his Corvidae powers, enhancing the precognitive abilities of his brothers. They fought in mandala formation, back to back and bolstering one another's abilities. A shield wall of psychic force deflected, absorbed, and repelled the powers of their taken brothers and their nightmarish master. Ahriman couldn't see Magnus, but he could feel his anguish. Across the circle, Phocis Takar was on his knees, grappling with Meltan, one of the Athenian Fellowship. Meltan's body was aflame from head to toe. Smoke boiled from molten eye lenses and from ruptured seams. Claws of fire were gouging through Phocis Takar's armor as if it was soft butter. Three other of Ahriman's brothers were dead, boiled alive inside their battle plate by Pavoni arts. Two more had been transformed into hideous, fused black statues as chain lightning seared them to the deck. A kind, deflective, mass-reactive bolt slammed Ahriman's pauldron, and fragments of its detonation tore at the surface of his helm. His vision fractured as an eye lens cracked. They fought in the eye of a hurricane, formed of fire and lightning, held at bay by Raptora kind barriers. Flames ignited spilled chemicals and curdled the air with smoke. Blue-white arcs of electricity leapt and spat between the metal girders overhead. Hollow laughter echoed from weeping shadows. Thus far, they had not employed any killing raptures, but their opponents were showing no such restraint. The six taken brothers of the Thousand Suns were blazing plumes of etheric light, their power horrifically magnified by the disembodied souls sealed beneath Morningstar. They were powerful, yes, but that power was a blunt instrument compared to the scalpel by which an adept of Prospero ought to wield such energy. Ahriman ducked as a future echo pulsed in his mind. A heavy metal gurney and its industrial-scale machinery slammed down where he had been standing, its mass driven by a hammer blow of kind force. It smashed three of his brothers from their feet. Two quickly got back in the fight. The third stayed down. Ahriman unleashed his own power in return, and another of Shaitan's snared warriors flew back, slammed into a wall by the return strike. He felt Phocis Takar's pain and spun on his heel, thrusting his locked palms forwards. Meltan staggered, but did not fall. The warrior turned, and his gaze locked Ahriman in place. Ahriman stared into burning eyes like gateways to the abyss. He was powerless against the depths of pain and suffering he saw there. Meltan took a step towards him, lifting hands that burned with the atomic fire of newborn stars.
"Why do you fight us?"
said Meltan, in a voice not his own. Ahriman had no answer. Telepathic raptures gouged his mind, and their raw force was too great to resist. The sounds of battle receded, and his urge to fight diminished as the fiery being walking towards him seemed less like a monster, more like an angel of blazing beauty. His death would be wondrous. A kine-wreathed fist exploded from Meltan's chest as Phocis Takar surged to his feet with a roar of anger. Augmented with power from the great ocean, the blow obliterated Meltan's torso. Gobbets of brilliant fire exploded from the impact, and Phocis Takar slumped against a bulkhead, glittering with psychic hoarfrost.
"I could have taken him," gasped Phocis Takar. "But thank you for the distraction."
Ahriman let out a heaving breath as the attack on his mind ceased and his psychic defenses threw off Meltan's raptures. The sounds of battle surged within his skull. The roar of flames, the crackle of lightning, the hard bangs of mass-reactive rounds, the pain of the dying, the fury of the dead.
"You killed him,"
he said at last, kneeling by the smouldering ruin of Meltan's remains.
"Of course I did,"
said Phocis Takar, drawing fresh power into his body.
"And you're a fool if you think we're going to get out of here without killing."
"He was our brother," said Ahriman, as the full horror of what Phocis Takar had done sank in.
"You killed a fellow legionary of the 15th.
Ahriman tried to look away from the broken remains of his brother, but the terrible significance of what Phocis Takar had done was too great. He reached down and placed both palms in Meltan's steaming blood.
"When we kill one another, it is the beginning of the end," said Ahriman,
as a host of jagged images ripped through his mind.
Broken ceramite, 10,000 bolters firing in unison on a world of black sand, a howling wolf beneath a four-faced moon, blood enough to drown the galaxy.
He stared at the rich redness coating his palms. The blood on his hands dripped from his fingertips, and he knew with terrible certainty that this would not be the last of his brothers that he saw murdered by one of their own.
"This is where our road diverges," said Ahriman.
"Damn Corvidae,"
said Phocis Takar, reloading his bolter with fresh shells.
"So worried about the future, you forget to live in the now. Come on, fight! They're enemies all around. Look!"
Ahriman shook off the grotesque images of slaughter as another vision filled his skull. He saw Magnus held down on a metal gurney, convulsing as a helm of gold isolated him from the heart of his power. A sudden stillness and a moment of silence isolated Ahriman. He heard a voice whisper into his mind.
"My favored son."
"I hear you,"
said Ahriman, turning and feeling a heart filled with regret and guilt coming from deeper into the chamber. The urge to break the mandala was overpowering, though it fought against every aspect of his training that told him to maintain it.
"What did you say?"
said Phocis Takar.
"I have to go to him,"
said Ahriman.
"Who?"
"Our father. He spoke to me."
Phocis Takar heard Ahriman's certainty and nodded.
"Spearhead!"
he yelled, and the Thousand Suns transitioned swiftly into their assault formation. A fighting wedge of ceramite and steel, a thrust of psychic might and Genhan's strength. Ahriman took position at the tip of the spear as Hathor Maat, or rather the thing that wore his flesh, stepped from a corona of psychic fire. Power haloed his brother, crude in comparison to what the true Hathor Maat could wield, but potent nonetheless.
"Pavoni, power in the wind!"
yelled Phocis Takar. Ahriman felt a sickening ache in his marrow, a restless ambition within his flesh. A fist of nausea clenched his gut as his cells responded to the mutant urge encoded in the earliest stages of their being. He willed his flesh to stillness, but the corpses hanging from the shattered cryotubes had no such imperative to resist. Rotten, centuries-dead meat jerked to spasmodic life as ether energy suffused glossy, jellied limbs. One by one, the sodden corpses pulled free from their shattered glass tubes, held aloft by the psychic strings of a mad puppeteer. The light of the great ocean burned in gaping eye sockets, and dead fluids drooled from slack jaws. Hundreds of the resurrected surrounded them, and more were lurching from their cryotubes with every passing moment.
"Bloody Pavoni,"
sighed Phocis Takar. Neon-bright pillars of radiance pierced the sky and etched themselves against the darkness. The clouds burned to vapour as collimated beams of orbital weaponry banished night and illuminated morning star for 1,000 kilometres in all directions. The orbital barrage fell in a cascade of macro lasers and atomic fire. As with everything the Iron Warriors did, it was relentless, thorough, and merciless. Perturabo felt the shockwaves from the destruction of the world-killing machinery a second after the flash dimmed the glass of the Stormbird's canopy. The gunship shuddered as the toroidal pressure wave sought to tear it from the sky. He gripped the control column and kept them pointed back towards Kalena as a continental-scale firestorm ignited over what remained of the planet's oceans.
"To unleash such devastation usually brings me a sense of vindication," said Perturabo. "A sense that some great evil had been defeated."
"You don't feel like that?" asked Barb and Falk.
"No, I feel nothing. This has achieved nothing."
"We knew that going in," pointed out Falk.
"I knew this vengeance would be symbolic, but I still assumed I would feel a measure of satisfaction at striking back."
"And you don't?"
"No, because we have already lost this fight. It was lost before we even made planetfall. Our enemies on Morningstar are beyond my ability to punish. To kill them would only fulfill their desire to die."
"Then what are we to do?"
"We save as many innocents as we can, then leave this world and never look back."
Falk nodded and turned back to the console as urgent comm chatter sparked over the vox. The storms and electromagnetic fallout from the orbital barrage made sifting the signal from the interference next to impossible. But Barb and Falk was a master at extracting meaning from chaos. His fingers danced over the controls, and howling interference filled the cockpit until the voice of Harkor was rendered in scratching, wavering static.
"Under attack! Breach the gates! The bastards are inside the Shirai Mavis! Systems failing throughout... No! Thousands of them! Don't! Prepare to fight!"
The transmission was abruptly cut off, and Perturabo and Falk shared a look of disbelief that an Iron Warrior's fortress could have been breached by mortals.
"Remember everything I just said about our enemies being beyond our ability to punish?"
"Yes," said Falk.
"I was wrong," said Perturabo. "These bastards will pay in blood for this, and I am going to enjoy every second of it."
The golden helm enclosed Magnus's head, and he felt the touch of electrodes at his temples. They buzzed with current. His mouth filled with moisture. He tasted metal.
"You don't need to do this," he said, as a host of needles pressed through his hair to prick his scalp.
"Everyone who lies on these slabs says that," said Shaitan.
"You don't... I can help you."
"How is it you think you can help us?" said Shaitan,
the light of its rage burning in Athava's eyes.
"Can you imagine the obscenity of what was done here? Thousands of innocents, whose only crime was to be born capable of miracles, were stripped of their uniqueness. Many did not survive the process, but those that did soon wished that they died. Imagine a painter losing his eyes overnight, a virtuoso musician shattering the bones of her hands, or a singer with the most sublime voice struck dumb. That is what they did to us. And you think you can help?"
Magnus let Shaitan's words wash through him, their remembered pain breaking his heart. He sifted the myriad splintered moments for a singular truth, searching for a way to free Athava and the others, a way to undo what had been done here. He closed his eye, letting his mind absorb Shaitan's pain, reliving it over and over through the memories of all those who had suffered here. When he opened it again, it was to see an echo of the past. The Medicaid chamber was as it had once been, pristine white and sterile, a place of terrible psychic surgery. Magnus looked up through the memory of the woman who had lain on this gurney before him. He wept as he experienced her terror and incomprehension at what was being done. Anonymous men in protective suits of vulcanized rubber, wearing rebreather masks and obscuring visors, loomed over her. They bore needles and psychically caustic drugs. He gagged on the plastic mouthguard intended to keep her from biting her tongue.
He thrashed as they fitted burning needles and clamps to her head. He clawed at their faces and managed to pull clear the mask of her nearest tormentor.
Magnus looked into his unremarkable features, seeing not the face of a monster, but a frightened, guilty man. Magnus plunged deep into this man's mind, learning everything about him in the space of a breath, his hopes and his dreams and everything that made him human. But the truth of mortal minds lay not in their dreams, but coiled in their fears. What terrors had consumed the settlers of this world? And the answer to the question he had posed to Perturabo when they began their mission to Morningstar was starkly clear. Magnus released his hold on the woman's memories of past horror and flew back to the present, drawing a great draft of chemical-rich air into his lungs. Pain throbbed at his temples, and glacial cold filled his immobile limbs. The electrodes within the golden helm pulsed with burning current, blackening the skin beneath. Wetness coated his scalp as the rotating needles eased inwards, millimetre by millimetre. His thoughts were sluggish. The low-level buzz of insects filled his skull. Magnus bit back the pain.
"I know why they did this to you."
"Because they feared us," snapped Shaitan. "And because fear leads to hate, they stripped us of our abilities."
"No," said Magnus.
"That wasn't it. That wasn't it at all."
"Then why?" demanded Shaitan. "Tell me why they did this to us. Why they let so many of us die screaming in terror or left broken and mad. Tell me what reason could possibly have justified all this."
"Old knight,"
gasped Magnus, as the needles met the resistance of bone.
"Old knight," said Shaitan.
"An age of strife and bloodshed like nothing seen before," said Magnus. "A wave of mass insanity that swept through human space, consuming entire worlds in a galactic extinction event."
The electrodes were burning Magnus's skin, the needles boring into his skull. He felt the sting of the psychoactive chemicals at their tips begin to spread into his bloodstream. How much longer did he have before his thought processes became too disconnected to reach Shaitan?
"Humanity was evolving too quickly," he said. "The emergence of so many with the psychogene was too sudden, too drastic. It could only end in disaster. The mass insanity. It manifested through the psychus, infecting whole worlds and plunging them into an abyss of ruin and death."
"No," said Shaitan.
"What they did here? It was terrible and monstrous and beyond all reach of morality, yes. But it made Morningstar a world without psychus. The killing madness never took hold of this place. It had no way in, no victims to infect. The planet's populace were immune. Old knights never fell."
"You lie," said Shaitan.
"Look inside my mind. See for yourself."
Shaitan stepped back, its stolen features twisted in dawning comprehension. Magnus felt its fury ebb before it surged back, more ferocious than ever.
"They saved the world," said Magnus.
"At the cost of our lives,"
shouted Shaitan.
"When you love something with every fragment of your soul, you will sacrifice anything to save it."
"Anything,"
said Shaitan.
"Anything. Trust me on this,"
said Magnus, before roaring in pain as the full power of the ancient machinery shrieked within the vault of his skull. It was unlike anything he had experienced or could have imagined. It burned the meat of his mind, cauterizing delicate psychic nodes and disrupting synaptic networks of arcane configurations. Magnus spasmed as the very essence of what made him unique amongst his brothers was drawn out of his mind like blood from a vein. The edges of the world grew dimmer, less vivid and defined. To see the world as those without seer sight saw it filled Magnus with gut-wrenching horror. Shaitan gripped his throat as if seeking to choke the life from him as well as sever him from his power, a maddened god exacting pain for pain, as if the scales could ever be balanced. Magnus fought against the force holding him down, his agony and the terror of being without his power lending strength to his limbs. His hand clamped around Athava's gorget, and he squeezed.
The metal and ceramite cracked, but Shai Tan only increased the pressure on his neck. Locked together in a lethal embrace, they were beings with the power of gods fighting a battle to the death, neither willing to surrender, both willing to meet their end. Movement caught Magnus's eye, blurred and hazed by pain, and the ruptured capillaries misting his vision with blood. He saw kine blades rising and falling, whipping arcs of psionic light, warriors in crimson plate awash with smoke and blazing auras. A host of dead, pallid-skinned golems surrounded them. Leading them was a warrior wreathed in amber fire, his radiance like that of the pious saints depicted on the ceilings of ancient temples.
"Azek!" gasped Magnus. "My favorite son!"
Ahriman charged Shai Tan, firing his bolter from the hip before reaching for his combat blade when the slide racked back on an empty breech. Shai Tan looked up and lifted one of his hands from Magnus's neck. A pale nimbus of light, like the glow of the dawn's first star, built around his fingers and exploded outwards in a series of spiraling comets. The explosive psychic impact filled the chamber with blinding light. Magnus cried out as Ahriman was tossed through the air to land limply across one of the slabs. He looked up into Athava's face, seeing ethereal masks of spite-filled souls reveling in the pain they had caused. Ahriman's assault had achieved only a momentary distraction, but it was all the opening that Magnus needed. Resolve settled in his bones, resolve he had known he lacked until now.
"I will save you,"
he said, wrenching his other hand free to tear loose Shaitan's grip on his neck.
"If you let me."
A kind pulse of thought pushed the needles from his skull, and Magnus sat bolt upright as Shai Tan recoiled.
"Your power is great, but it is undisciplined," he said, twisting Arthava's wrist and snapping it with a sickening crack of bone.
The souls within Arthava screamed at this reversal. Magnus rolled and shrugged Arthava from him like a brawler pinning his opponent to the floor. He held Arthava to the slab, one hand around his neck, the other poised in a fist above him.
"I am Magnus, master of Prospero, and I was taught by the Emperor of Man, the greatest psyker in the galaxy," he said, looking deep within Shai Tan. "Against that, you have nothing."
Athava's body convulsed beneath him, wild psychic energy contorting his limbs in unnatural ways as Shai Tan fought Magnus's iron discipline. He felt fury snapping at him, an eternal anger that knew no forgiveness. Magnus nodded as if coming to a solemn decision within himself.
"I am sorry, my son," he said. "There is no other way."
The golden helm snapped down over Athava's head and shimmered with power as the needles punched deep into his skull.
"Hold to your silver cord," cried Magnus,
as a looming vision of a dreadful, faceless angel burned itself on his mind.
"Hold fast to it and never let go, or it will be your end."
Magnus closed his eye, but could not cut himself off from the awful sound of his son's pain and fear. He heard the drilling needles pierce bone and felt the burning horror of the chemicals, neuroscramblers and gemnid shears doing their grisly work within Athava's skull. Shai Tan screamed as it once again endured the agonies that had birthed it, the horror of being torn from a body of flesh and blood. It fled Athava and surged into the ether as a billowing storm of hate and fury. Magnus saw it as a swirling red maelstrom, a demon of nightmare taking shape in a psychic storm that burned the air with its fury. He had been waiting for Shai Tan to abandon its host, and stood before its swelling storm fury with one arm thrust forwards, the other flat upon the great grimoire chained to his waist. Shai Tan howled, and the deck plates buckled with its violence. Magnus remained upright as hurricane winds of psychic force sought to dash him against the walls. He rooted himself to the spot, an immovable object in the face of irresistible force.
"What happened here was unforgivable," said Magnus. "I promise it will be remembered. You will all be remembered."
He thrust his grimoire towards Shaitan's essence, and its cover of red leather flew open like a portal to other worlds. Shai Tan shrieked and fought against the pull of the Book of Magnus, but the grimoire's depthless thirst for learning
was like an irresistible ocean vortex.
All who died in these halls will live again,
promised Magnus.
Let go of the hate, and you will be born anew in a realm of limitless imagination.
The strongest souls within Shaitan's essence resisted, unwilling to let go of their hatred, but more and more were accepting Magnus's offer with every passing second. Magnus drew them all into the book, a litany of names and lives, a record of the dead and the forgotten. He was their conduit, and he experienced their lives in the space of a heartbeat as he offered them a future. And pages replete with ancient tales of magic and legends were enriched with a new cast of characters, fresh players to strut upon the stages of strange and mythical lands. Within the pages of Magnus's book, the stolen souls of Morningstar would live incredible lives and experience untold adventure. The cover of the book slammed shut, and the hurricane winds vanished in an instant. Magnus let out a shuddering breath and sank to his knees. A sudden stillness fell across the chamber. The bodies of the dead and his enslaved sons fell to the deck, now freed from Shaitan's controlling force.
My lord,
said a voice, and Magnus looked up to see Arzek Ahriman staring at him.
Is it over?
Magnus placed a hand upon his grimoire and thought of what he had learned in his connection to Shaitan. His shoulders slumped, as if the greatest burden imaginable had just been placed upon him.
No,
he said.
There is one last dark deed before us.
What dark deed? Asked Ahriman.
To finish what was begun, said Magnus.